Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Want to catch up with the national pastime in a short time? Tune into the Morning Lineup podcast. Every weekday, in less than 10 minutes, we'll bring you all the wonderful...
He's done it again! See ya! A monster two-run home run!
All the wild...
Here comes Ramos! This game is over!
All the weird...
Contreras is chewing on the tape.
...that makes the MLB season special. Check out the Morning Lineup on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Please welcome accomplished pitcher and popular broadcaster, Steve Stone.
Yes.
Steve Stone.
Are you noticing that? Paying attention to it?
Well, I will tell you, Speaks, if you've noticed it, I've noticed it.
Cy Young Award winner.
By the way, next time you go to talk about Ozzy, call me a legend, will you please?
I always call you a legend.
Noel, you're the legend. Don't forget.
Hey.
Okay.
Now, I always address Steve Stone as the legend because that is fitting. I mean, 55 years of Major League Baseball, you get legendary status, my friend.
We'll give Ozzy that another 30, 40 years on the job. We'll give him that.
Chicago White Sox television analyst.
We check out the odds for White Sox home run hitters today. What do we like today?
I'm going with Miguel Vargas. I'm thinking that he's going to get a hold of one. He can take the ball out any place in this ballpark, but if he lifts it to left or left center field, it's going out.
Vargas hits this one well to left field. Rave going back, and it is gone! Miguel Vargas, his ninth of the season. A two-run shot, and the White Sox strike first here in the first inning.
Well, I would say that if you took my advice, you're going to be dancing in the proverbial streets. I want to be a rock star.
Steve Stone with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Mark Carotti and Anthony Heron in for Spiegel and Holmes on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score today. White Sox have been playing better lately. Just took 2 out of 3 from Kansas City. Split with Detroit. The White Sox are at Houston tonight. Shane Smith against Lance McCullers, and Steve Stone does join us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. It's nice when the team you're covering is playing better, isn't it, Stoney?
Well, it is, and it's not only the wins. Obviously, everybody's looking for wins, and you certainly want to do that. I'm looking at the kind of baseball they're playing. What I'm watching is some young guys who have just burst on the scene who seem to me like they're going to be here for a while. It doesn't look like a one-and-done type when I talk about Mydroth, although I believe he's going to be a second baseman and not a shortstop. I think that this guy has shown that he can really hit. Anytime you put the numbers on the board like he has, you get to 2 strikes. He has no problem with that because he is a contact hitter. So looking at him, looking at Teal coming up, and I know that Kyle is going to hit for some power. Right now he's just trying to make some contact and looks pretty impressive. His pop time to second base is just outstanding. He had one below 2 the other day, threw out the base runner at second base. It was Waters, who's got pretty good speed, and he got him, and he got him by a pretty good margin. So you look at that, you look at Vargas, who's really come alive of recent vintage, and you realize you make a mistake on Elko, he's probably going to hit it hard. I'm not quite as sure as him as I am of some of the other young guys around, but Colson Montgomery is starting to hit the baseball out of the ballpark. He's probably the shortstop of the future, you would assume. And so, yes, along with Edgar Caro, there's some hope. There's some guys who can really play. They're young. They're aggressive. They never give up at bats. They hustle every moment. And so, yes, I think things are looking a whole lot better for the Sox these days.
So then what I want to ask now, Steve, is are you starting to see – I know you just mentioned these guys as guys that are looking good as young players, but are we starting to see that next wave, that next, dare I say, core of players? When you mentioned Mydroff and Teal and Vargas and Caro and so on and so forth, are we seeing the guys that might be here the next time the White Sox win?
I think so. I mean, they're young enough, and I think they're good enough to be at least a core with a few additions. There's no doubt that the bullpen needs a little attention. Taylor probably is going to come up. I don't know exactly what he's going to do, but it looks to me like this is a guy that can fill a role in the back end. I looked at his stuff in spring training, and it's really impressive. So that's one of the guys. I mentioned Colson Montgomery, another one of the guys. Hagen Smith and Noah Schultz are a couple more guys. So, you know, there was many years when there was so little talent in the White Sox organization that you looked at it and you said, you know, there's not a whole lot of hope unless they start developing these guys. And then Chris Getz in his front office made some really good trades. I know Garrett Crochet is a number one starting pitcher. He's good enough where you can take him. He can start the first game of the World Series for you. But the Sox knew that when they gave him up. But the four guys they got in return, looks like that's going to be a really good trade for both teams. And that's really what you want to do when you make a deal, because then you can make another one with the same team. The Red Sox had a stacked organization. Sox took advantage of it. And so it looks to me like there is a lot of hope for the future. And along with the next wave of guys, this particular wave of guys, looks to me like, number one, they seem to understand how to play this game. And I can't speak highly enough of Will Venable, because, you know, he's a rare combination of a type of manager that the players both like and respect. You really don't have to have both. I mean, as long as they respect you, they don't have to like you. I played with a number of managers that the team didn't like very much, but it really didn't matter. If they have a respect for him, and I think you look at Will and you realize his father was a major leaguer, he was a major leaguer. I think he understands how difficult this game is. I think he understands and has a high baseball acumen. He's really in the infancy stages of what I believe is going to be a really strong career. And then I look at the moves that Chris Getz made, and it's not just players he brought in. It's a revamping of the front office with some quality guys that also understand how to put together a real good team. And so I think that I think the positive sign, the arrow is pointing straight up, I think, for the Sox organization. And bear in mind something. This is not the National League West, and it's not the American League East. Mm-hmm. It's the Central in the American League. There's some decent teams. Detroit, obviously, is very good. But you don't have to beat super teams on a daily basis to be able to compete for a wild card or the division championship.
The point you were making there about Will Venable really intrigues me, because, you know, of course, the previous regime with Pedro Grifol, the concern was that perhaps just you weren't seeing a team that was ascending. You weren't seeing improvement throughout the season. That's evident right now in Venable's first season running things. And a lot of the credit that you kind of doled around there, I'm wondering how much more cohesive is the infrastructure just within the organization, not only at the major league level, the way that the minor league talent is being developed in a way that seems in line with what the big club wants them doing. Is there a lot that's just working much better now than perhaps it did a couple of seasons ago?
I think there's a lot that's happening better. I think, you know, occasionally when Chris Withers, who's one of the finest producers in the business, he'll get a reaction shot from that dugout. You'll take a look at that dugout, and you'll see just about every one of those guys congratulating the guy who did something really well. It's not only just a base hit. It's moving a guy along. It's hitting a sacrifice fly when you can't afford a ground ball with the infield in. And these guys are all pulling for one another. And the best thing that can happen for these guys is that they start to learn how to win together. Because to be a good major league team, it has to come in stages. And the first stage is to be competitive a lot later in the game. And I think we're seeing, unlike last year where this team was blown out quite a bit, this year this team is competitive late in many of the games. So you get to that point, and then you have to learn how to take the game away in the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning, because that's really what good teams do. From the time this game started, the bad teams give the game away in the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning, and the good teams take it away. And I think that's what Davis Martin said in a recent interview. He said this team is starting to learn how to take games away late, and that is the next stage. And I think that's what the team is doing. So, yes, it's a completely different group than the Pedro Grifol team. And I liked Pedro as a person. I thought he was terrific. You don't have to play in the major leagues. You don't have to be a star to be a really good manager, but I think it really helps. And I think the pedigree that Will Venable comes from is really helping him right now. He's helping him understand something. I think that Will leans on his coaches a lot. He gives them a great deal of autonomy, and I think he's listening to all of the pitching gurus in this organization. You got Matt Wise in your bullpen. You got Ethan Katz, who's a really good pitching coach, and you bring in Brian Bannister, who came to this organization with the hope of turning this thing around. Brian Bannister is one of the elite front office guys in all of baseball as far as pitching is concerned, and I think Will is really helped by them. I think that's something that maybe Pedro didn't do enough of. I thought Pedro made a few pitching mistakes. You can remember back in a key game, Carlos Rodon didn't throw out of the bullpen for, I don't know, for most of the season. He put him in a key situation, and boom, a three-run homer, and that was about it. So I think that Will is not going to fall victim to any of that. And from what I've seen, and again, it's very early in Will's career, from what I've seen, he's got a very high baseball acumen, and he seems to understand the moves he has to make to get his team at least in a position to win the game. Then it'll be, of course, up to the team, whether they come off the bench, whether they're trying to close, whether they're trying to set up, or whether they're coming in the sixth inning in a key situation. He seems to be pressing the right buttons at this point, and I think he's only going to get better.
Well, one of the names that you mentioned in that incorrectly, because he has sounded nothing but impressive, is White Sox pitching coordinator Brian Bannister, which brings me back to, I'm glad you mentioned his name, because that brings me back to Grant Taylor, the pitcher the Sox promoted from AA Birmingham. He's the Sox sixth ranked prospect for MLB Pipeline, or per them, recently moved to Birmingham and their bullpen last month, 9 straight scoreless appearances, struck out 18 against one walk and 9 in the third innings of relief. He's done some starting as well. But Steve, check this out from Brian Bannister. He calls him one of the best arms he's ever seen. What do you think about that coming from Bannister?
I think he's right. I mean, I watched him in spring training. I haven't watched him during the course of this year, quite obviously, because we got our hands full with the major league team. But his stuff is overwhelming. Then the one question you ask is, can he consistently throw it in the zone? You mentioned the strikeout-to-walk ratio. It's otherworldly. So apparently, with a fastball that can occasionally get to triple digits and some really impressive breaking stuff, he's able to get everything over the plate. And so, for me, you have to go with the organization and the needs of that organization. So I mentioned Hagen Smith. I mentioned Noah Schultz. They're two left-handed starters, and when they do get here, they're going to add to that starting rotation because they're not relievers at this point. You have very strong starting pitching in the major leagues right now as you're seeing game in and game out. I mean, these guys, these starters are doing a wonderful job. So the organization needs a guy at the back end. Whether that's set up or close, I think from what I've seen, Grant Taylor has the stuff to close. I think he has the mentality. I think he has the consistent arm on a daily basis to be able to do that. And I'm not going to quibble with Brian Bannister. He's been around too long and done too good a job to not know what he's saying. And when he gives a guy that kind of praise and puts that stamp on him, I got to believe him.
So Michael Kopech was in the not-too-distant past as the guy with the enormous stuff, similar stature to Grant Taylor as well, and we saw him go starter, reliever, closer, and deal with, you know, both physical and mental, emotional things on and off the field. There's no perfect formula for developing the modern pitcher, but are there things to learn from Kopech or others who just, you know, the Sox haven't necessarily been able to kind of get them to the finish line of what it felt like was great physical potential?
Well, one thing that you have to realize, and that is outs. The outs at the end of the game are just unbelievably tough. And those outs in the ninth inning, those three outs in the ninth inning are like no other outs in the game. So then you ask yourself, from a psychological standpoint, because physical, you're right, Michael Kopech had really good stuff. I don't think he ever had the overall stuff of Grant Taylor, but he had a pretty good fastball. And bear in mind the philosophy, because when Michael was coming out of Texas, his philosophy was throwing the ball through the catcher instead of to the catcher. And he always was a guy that wanted to start, and maybe that was one of the reasons why things didn't work out well. He also had some physical issues, but I think that Grant Taylor has a lot over Michael Kopech in that department, and we'll just have to see how he does because we don't know what he's going to do in the major leagues. I just know that the tools you need for outs 25, 26, and 27, he's got. Most guys don't. Because when you talk about lockdown closers, you're talking about a guy that will be successful 85% of the time. Then you look around the league and you ask yourself, how many guys like that are there in the major leagues right now? And the answer will be maybe five, maybe six, maybe not, maybe less. So it shows you just how tough that job is. And until you put somebody in that role, you don't really know how he's going to do. I've seen a lot of really good setup men, a lot of eighth inning guys that got everybody out. I'll take you back many years, and most of the people listening today might not remember Paul Ossenmacher, who came from Atlanta, came to the Cubs, eighth inning, lights out. Nobody could hit him. Ninth inning, they beat his ears off. Why? Because those last three outs are really difficult, and very few guys can do it. I think Grant Taylor can do it, but the proof will be, can he do it in the major leagues? And that remains to be seen. But one of the things that I like is that Baltimore for years would take guys with enormous potential. They would start them in the bullpen, and then eventually they would come and be a starting pitcher. I think just the opposite can be true, and I think one of the reasons why they started Grant Taylor initially was they wanted to get the reps in for him. They wanted him to face all the situations. They wanted him to go after maybe 18 guys, get to 15 outs and then get out of there. But I think that stuff lends itself to the closer. And now it'll be up to Grant Taylor to be able to do that. I can't wait for him to get here. I can't tell you when it's going to be. I just know he's going to be here. And when he does, guys, I want you to take a close look at that stuff. It is elite stuff. And if you've got the rest of the package to go with it, and we will know when he gets here, then I think they've got themselves a back end of the bullpen guy, a guy who can close. And look at how good this team looked at times when Liam Hendricks was coming in. And he was a 30-plus save guy a year. He could get those last outs. He was a converted starter who moved to the back end of the bullpen, picked up another 2 or 3 miles an hour, maybe 4 miles an hour. I saw him as a starter, and quite frankly, he was on his way out of the game. But as a closer, he was one of the best in baseball. And I think a lot of guys expect that Grant Taylor is probably going to do the same thing. Now, will he do it at that level? It's going to take some experience. But I am anxious to see.
That's really interesting stuff. And I see your Paul Ossenmacher, by the way, Stoney, and I'll raise you a LaTroy Hawkins and a Carlos Marmol, both guys that were really good in the eighth inning for the Cubs back in the day. But then when they were put in the ninth, it just didn't work out. So there is a different mentality that exists with that. And Grant Taylor, by the way, just giving the full stats, I gave you the 18 Ks to one walk, as Stoney said right out of that question. This year, a 101 ERA in 15 games with 37 strikeouts to 11 walks, a 135 average against. So hopefully we'll get to lay eyes on him tonight when the White Sox are at Houston just a little bit later on. Stoney, I got to get off the field just a little bit because the news came out that the White Sox owner Jerry Reinsdorf has a deal in place to possibly sell control of the team to billionaire Justin Ishbia as early as 2029. What do you think when you hear that, and what will it mean to this organization?
Well, the rest of that deal says that Jerry has to sell by 2034. So there is a gap between 29 and 34. As you guys know, it's 5 years. So if Jerry wants to, that's control for 9 more years. At that point, he'll be 98 years old. And so I looked at the deal, and I also looked in the fact that Justin is going to put some money into the organization. I think that's certainly going to help, because I think when the Sox look at what they have going into next year, maybe make an addition or two, perhaps a few extra bucks would lend them to go out and get somebody else that can really get it done. Because there are a couple of things that the Sox really need. This is a small ballpark when it gets warm. When it gets warm, the rate is one of those ballparks where the ball just flies. Mm-hmm. I think the Sox need some more power, and that's one thing that they're going to have to address. And they need the back end of the bullpen. That bullpen has to start to coalesce around the back end, and then you get some other guys who are used at the back end who would be much more serviceable in the sixth or seventh inning. And so I think that for a lot of people who don't believe that they're going to live to see the next championship for the Sox, I think they're looking at a team that's really just starting to put everything together with some young players who have talent. And the one thing that you'll see from a Will Venable team, I haven't seen anybody loaf yet. Luis Robert is having just a horrific offensive year, and yet he's among the best in baseball stealing bases, and he's among the best in baseball playing defense in center field. And the other day when he hit a ground ball, the inning would have ended, except Luis Robert was running with everything he had to first base. This is a guy that's been hitting 180. You can get pretty depressed hitting 180 in the major leagues. And yet, in a situation where he knew if he hustled with everything he had, he could beat the play at first base and keep the inning alive. That shows me that this has been addressed with each and every one of these players. That's not only Will Venable, it's his entire coaching staff that said, boys, we're going to give you a blueprint in how to play good, solid, winning baseball when we get to that point. But you have to lay the foundation. And as we watch each and every one of these games, we are seeing the foundation being laid. And so for me, it's very exciting. And hopefully we see more of the same with a couple of additions. I think that this could be a team that's relevant.
And their relevance, hopefully, like you mentioned, you kind of referenced the idea of more wins being on the way here and to be at the bottom of the division, but be hopeful about where the Sox are at right now. It's a fun position to be in, one that we haven't been able to really operate in for a couple of years at this point.
Oh, you're right about that, and I don't think anybody can argue with you there. Last year was one of those things that when you looked at it, you went, wow, this is really tough. And, you know, it was difficult, but you have to go through that. I mean, you look at some of the teams that won championships. Look at a three-year span of the Houston Astros. Look at a three-year span of the Kansas City Royals. You see a whole lot of those teams that aren't the Los Angeles Dodgers and aren't the New York Yankees or the New York Mets. They go through some really trying times before they get to the point where they're ready to win. They make an addition or two, and all of a sudden, you got yourself a team that is at least contending for not only the division championship, but in the case of both of those teams, World Series wins. And so, you know, I'm seeing the start of that. I'm not going to tell you what's going to happen because this is a really strange game and very strange things happen. And the predictions are very difficult to make down the road. But, you know, occasionally you come up with a Miguel Vargas prediction and it works.
Yeah.
And so that's what kind of I'm looking at here.
And it's been a frustrating stretch just for Chicago baseball fans in general. And now with the way things have gone on the north side, things looking up on the south side, can you take us into that space that you've been able to operate in a way that a lot of folks haven't, when both organizations are really pushing chips in a way that feels like they're prepared to win? If we're going to be there in the not too distant future, what are those times like?
Well, I think it's wonderful. And, you know, look, I still remain, and I'm very proud of this, I still remain the only person that's ever pitched for both teams and done both radio and television for both teams, meaning the Cubs and the White Sox. And I saw some winning years on the north side of town, and unfortunately I haven't seen the winning years on the south side. I wasn't here in 2005. However, having been able to see both these teams up close and personal, understand the fans of both of these teams up close and personal, it's something I'm very proud of. But also, the best thing that could happen for me, and again, you know, I'm going to be 78 years old here, sometime before I decide that I want to ride off in the sunset, I want to see a World Series with both the Cubs and the Sox. I think in this city, that would be the single greatest thing that ever happened. Better than, obviously, the Super Bowl Bears, better than the Blackhawks who won the three Stanley Cups. I mean, better than anything, because it would take the entire fandom of a city and they would just absolutely go crazy. Now, it'd be pretty disappointing for whoever loses that series. I just want to see that series because I think the city would be up for grabs to me. There would be more excitement than ever. And the best part about that is as both teams would be closing in contention, both winning their divisions or the wild card, both getting to the World Series, the excitement that that journey would take would be something that nobody will ever forget that's a fan of either of the Chicago teams.
That's great stuff, Stoney. That is unforgettable. Thank you very much for joining us, and enjoy Houston. May we see Grant Taylor closing and saving a game for the White Sox tonight.
Wait.
Well, you're going to see him eventually, and I'm in Arizona. Gordon Beckham is going to take my seat. He's going to be a lot more comfortable than I am right now because it's about 105 degrees and I'm walking on a patio because I want to get out of the fans and all the misters that are going on to keep things livable. But I'll be watching the game and I'll be pretty excited about it. And by the way, just from a strictly interesting standpoint, Houston is minus 180 tonight. I think you can get the Sox for plus 145.
Oh.
And for me, with Shane Smith pitching, to me, I guess they would call them a live dog, boys.
Okay, Stoney.
We got a live dog.
Let's go. Let's go.
I love it. I love it, man. Yeah. Well, hey, let me just see that and add this to you, Stone. I feel like we're going back and forth here. His ERA, Shane Smith's, you ready for this, Steve, is the ninth lowest in club history by a pitcher in his first career 12 starts. How you like that for a dog or whatever you just said?
Well, having seen him just about every game he's thrown and see how good he's been, let's give him a great deal of credit. That's a wonderful stat. But go back and giving credit to the front office. There's two Rule 5 drafts on this team. It's difficult to get one who gives you a meaningful season. To get two is unbelievable. And Mike Vassell, who might wind up as a starting pitcher somewhere here, and Shane Smith are two Rule 5 drafts in the same year. That is great scouting. That is great evaluation of these guys that can really help this team, and both of them have been wonderful. Look at the numbers of Mike Vassell, and look at the numbers of Shane Smith, and you would say to yourself, how in the world did that team ever let them go? And one of the things that I said when I saw Shane Smith in spring training, I went to Chris Getz, and I said, you can't tell me there's 40 guys for a roster better than this guy.
Wow.
And he said to me, he said he's a different guy now than he was because he added that changeup, and he picked up 2 or 3 miles an hour on the velocity. I don't know how he did it, but I do know he did it. And this guy that's pitching now, he's a number one or number two. And to say that he couldn't make the 40-man roster, he couldn't have been the same guy because nobody lets this guy go for nothing in the Rule 5 draft. It's $50,000 you're letting this guy go. Well, if he was on the open market, if this was his free agent year, there's no telling what he could make. To me, as a starting pitcher, if he continues for the next 18, 19 starts, you're looking at a guy that pencils out probably as a $20 million starter. The Sox got him for $50,000.
God, man.
You figure it out.
This is the best I have felt about the Chicago White Sox all season long after talking to you. Congratulations, and thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Well, guys, I know you're pinch hitting, and hitting 100 for my career, I never had a chance to pinch hit, but have a good rest of the show, and hopefully we talk down the road.
All right, man.
Not 1,000, but 100.
There goes Steve. I'd say we're hitting about 270 or so. Yeah?
You think so?
Yeah, I think we're 270 still doesn't go out of style.
That's
right,
passable.
Steve? I mean, like 270's not bad, right?
No, 270 gets you that big house and you drive that fancy car. If you can hit 270, drive in some runs, you can pretty much start where you want to start.
Oh, hell yeah.
I'll take that.
Hell yeah. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it, man.
Okay, guys, take care and have a good rest of the show, and I'll talk to you.
All right, thanks. That was great stuff from Steve Stone.
Yeah.
I love Mike Vassell, by the way. He's talking about him in terms of like what a bargain he can be. He's got great, like his great story, great personality. So I love hearing. That's why it put me in a good mood. The stuff about Steve saying the greatest thing that could ever happen in sports is in this town is the Cubs versus the Sox. That's incorrect. That's incorrect. Nobody yeah. wants that. Nobody. The As he said, the danger of
the city
being
might burn.
The danger of being the loser in that. Like the greatest thing until half the fan base loses and is depressed and is just squashed out
but
forever.
But the first six games of that seven-game World Series.
It would be a blast.
That'd be something.
It would be on edge and it would be a blast. We got to take a break. When we come back, we are going to hear from Jed Hoyer. He is the Cubs president of baseball operations. He is talking and we will be playing things from him next on The Score.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Want to catch up with the national pastime in a short time? Tune into the Morning Lineup podcast. Every weekday, in less than 10 minutes, we'll bring you all the wonderful...
He's done it again! See ya! A monster two-run home run!
All the wild...
Here comes Ramos! This game is over!
All the weird...
Contreras is chewing on the tape.
...that makes the MLB season special. Check out the Morning Lineup on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Spiegel and Holmes.
I might swerve in that corner.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Okay.
See, we're in full service, 670 The Score station.
Afternoons on The Score.
Yeah, I think barring injury, there's probably, you know, there's probably some small things on the offensive side, but really I think that our position playing group has been really good. I think that the thing that we've done probably better than anything offensively is just the depth we have, top to bottom. I think we're getting production, kind of both offensively and defensively from all our spots, and that's made a huge difference. So I think, yeah, as I think about it, I think that, pitching is the likely direction we would take if we were adding.
Seems pretty logical, yeah, to everybody. And it carries all the weight, though, when you hear it from Jed Hoyer, the Cubs president of baseball operations right there. That's what eventually, as good as the Cubs are and as well as they have withstood without their top two pitchers, they're probably going to need an extra pitcher eventually. And Shota Imanaga still going to need a couple of more tune-ups. He had a successful one yesterday.
Come on, Showtime.
That's right, right. Need your buddy. Need your buddy. But Justin Steele not walking through that door. And that's where you start to look at the list of guys like Zach Eflin from Baltimore, Chris Sale in Atlanta. Just keep hoping that this weird season Atlanta's had continues.
Chris Sale now to still be pitching like this?
Yeah, I would guess. I want you to look it up. I'm going to go ahead and guess that Chris Sale is 35. I'm going to say Chris Sale is 35 years old.
You're all over it, 36.
Whoa, look at me. Look at me. Yeah, it's almost like, he started his career in Chicago, and we all obsessively follow what Chris
Sale
does.
He just turned 36. He was 35 up to a couple months ago.
Just a baby. Mm-hmm. Dylan Cease, maybe, and another guy. Sick. Patrick Corbin. All these names that we're going to keep on discussing, and names will be added to the list. But Jed Hoyer talking to the New York Post Sports on their podcast about a couple of issues or things, and one of those is his very well-paid manager, Craig Counsell. We haven't heard a lot about Craig Counsell this year, probably because he has led a successful team. So in terms of like moves that he makes and doesn't make, but let's hear from Jed Hoyer on what he is saying about the difference with Craig Counsell this year.
I do think that the second year, this provides comfort. I think that's, he's more comfortable here. It's not everything new. It's not about him, which I think, how he is as a person, he doesn't want that. So I think the second year has definitely been more comfortable, but in a lot of ways, I give him a lot of credit last year, roughly this time of year last year, like we really struggled for about 6 weeks. We couldn't hit, our bullpen was blowing games. We ended up falling to like 9 under. And from that point, we really dug out and played really good baseball. Unfortunately, in the National League last year, the Padres, Diamondbacks, Mets just didn't lose during that period. And so we weren't able to get all the way back there. But I thought he showed a really steady hand last year when we fell down and then ended up playing really well for the last kind of 3.5 months of the season. And I think that's carried over to this year. So I think his comfort is better, but I also think he's an excellent manager. He makes good decisions in games. I think he handles the clubhouse exceptionally well. He's been fantastic for us. I know last year didn't go exactly as we hoped, but I thought the things he showed in the second half were really excellent. And like I said, I've led into this part of the first part of this year.
And this man, and that's Jed Hoyer again, New York Post. This manager has to be good. Like he has to be good. That's why it's nice that right now, I did not want to have at any point in time this season the discussion about Craig Counsell, because, and that's fair game. Craig Counsell is the third highest paid manager in baseball right now, certainly the most well paid Cubs manager in history. All that goes with it, getting rid of David Ross to bring him on, he's fair game. That they decided that the manager is capable of getting you wins and making you a better team. That's what this organization decided. So it's just so important that we see Craig Counsell begin to put his print on this team and have some say in what has gone on. It is imperative that he is good and that we're not talking about him in a bad way.
There's so much of Craig Counsell's approach that seems like it fits with the Cubs' DNA, because they've really, since Theo came in and took things over, have been so consistently an analytics-driven organization, and structurally from top to bottom, really been about making sure that the numbers indicate a strategy that makes sense, and being about logic and predictive metrics. And so much of that has led to, you know, for a little while, some extended success. And then, of course, the downturn that was there. But then to bring in Craig Counsell, it just feels like he speaks the same language with Jed and with Carter and with everyone else that's there. And he's the guy who gets to, in the clubhouse, day-to-day, moment-to-moment, implement their strategy. But I feel like because of his resume, and frankly because of his demeanor, my impression is they respect him so much that there's perhaps more sway that Craig Counsell has than any of the last couple of managers have been able to have with this brass. Even a Joe Maddon, who, of course, ended up leading them to a World Series championship. But Joe Maddon's demeanor, like his DNA, was a little bit different, I think, than the front office approach the Cubs were necessarily looking for. Counsell really seems to suit exactly what they were wanting him to be.
Well, he did. They did put it as, and I'm paraphrasing it from when he was brought in, they kind of looked at him as an extension of the front office. Mm. They did look at him as a guy who is brainy and understand things. And Lord knows, like, nobody's going to mess with what Craig Counsell wants. There's not going to be no interference on the lineup or anything like that. And I'm sure that in the case of David Ross, as he's managing for the first time, that they assisted him, let's put it that way, a little bit more. I do wonder, like, what has Craig Counsell been responsible for? And that's what we don't know. But I like to think about it. I like to think about somebody like Pete Crow Armstrong, who last year, mostly every time Craig Counsell got to talk about PCA, he was pretty honest about it, like what he needed to be better at, even with some of the hot dog and stuff, like where he, you know, he was very calming about it, but very honest about this play. I do wonder if it was Craig Counsell who said last year, at that time that when he got sent down, it was a little surprising he was sent down. Is that Craig Counsell going, I can't use this guy right now. He's not ready. You know, everybody wants PCA to be ready. Like, did he have something to do with that? This year, the whole, I do wonder about the Shaw stuff at third base. Like, what was that? Is that Craig Counsell saying, I can't, I no more of this. I can't, this guy ain't ready. But there have been, it feels like, since Craig Counsell has been here, bigger picture moves that feel a little bit more decisive than previous to when he was here.
And the PCA example, the Matt Shaw example, those to me, when you're looking at the last 2 years of talented young prospects who get their opportunity, struggle early, get sent down, now get brought back up, and we're seeing Matt Shaw have his degree of success, PCA off the charts so far this season and his success. And for Craig Counsell, being upfront and honest in addressing it publicly with the media when talking about those guys and riding that wave with them of what they've been as professionals, but then you would imagine also extremely upfront, honest and analytical, and in a lot of ways, probably just sort of, you know, a monotone sort of demeanor, just a very consistent sort of delivery on here's what didn't go well, here's what you need to work on. Mm-hmm. Matt Shaw, go back down. Yeah, you know, we want you to just get comfortable at the plate, but then once we do get to the point where we're seeing you get a little more comfortable, let's work on the leg kick. Let's work on the toe tap. Let's get that timing mechanism adjusted to what you've got to do when you're facing pros here. And a small tweak, when you have a guy who's really talented like Matt Shaw is. And
yeah,
I don't know if I mentioned it to you before. You know, he was at Maryland. I covered his career doing the Big Ten thing. Saw his entire run there with the Terps. And he's a really athletic guy. You know, makes all kinds. I mean, just look at the game last night. The Cubs lost the game. But some of those plays he was making in extras, like the 10th inning, multiple plays, the double play where he snags it, taps the bag, slings it over there to first base to make his own double play. Another one where ball should have been in left field somewhere. He's able to snag it before it gets out there.
Yeah.
Like, the glove is really crafty and fluid. His movement, his athleticism, his body control looks like he should be playing a different sport or doing like acrobatics or something like that. But that's what you need from an infielder. But he also does swing a big stick, and we're starting to see more of that as well. So the talent is there. And I think this sort of even keel approach of Craig Counsell that he's able to just kind of have about him on a daily basis, it certainly does seem to help some of these young players ride that wave.
Even with the veterans, like I'm thinking about Dansby Swanson now. When he had that terrible slump, moved him down in the lineup, got red hot. Now he's been slumping lately.
Well, that's, and I mean, you know, we obviously went with the topic of the moment here with the back-to-back ejections, but we didn't get around to asking him about Dansby a little bit. But, yeah, runners in scoring position, Dansby has been struggling with that a lot here lately. So at some point, you wonder if that move is coming. But he is also a veteran. He's been around the block. And when do you decide to sort of push that button with a guy like Dansby Swanson? Because we've seen him execute it before. So is the moment right now while the entire offense is in the midst of some struggles? So if you move Dansby down, who's really earned the right to come up? Because everybody's been kind of cold here over the last week. So I feel like there's sort of some nuance in that balancing act of when you make that decision, you would like it to be not only it's a demotion for you, but someone else has earned the promotion of coming up the lineup a little bit more too. And I'm not sure that that's the situation they're in right now, at least over the way things have gone for the most part the past week.
Yeah, and I was thinking too about PCA and specific to last night in terms of the where he was and where he is now. When he first came up to the big leagues, the thing was he couldn't handle velocity. He wasn't able to hit fastballs, which is frightening. You know what I mean? Like, and I get it. Like I shouldn't take that for granted when everybody's throwing 97 plus. So that's really hard to do. But it's like, okay, usually it's the slider or the curve or something else that gets you. So it was kind of like, oh man, this guy may be a ways off. And then last night, in that 11th inning, he gets that to put the Cubs up 3-2. The Cubs were leading in the 11th, and he hits a 100-mile-per-hour Carlos right. Hernandez on that RBI double. And it was just he did it with such great ease, and it just made my brain do a snapshot juxtaposing both of those versions of PCA. Different stances in the box, different approach at the plate physically, and obviously from a mental standpoint. It was pretty cool to think about that.
And to see a guy who he does seem a lot more composed in the box. And I know part of your question about PCA has been just whether or not the maturity is there after plays get made, whether there's disappointing moments. Is he kind of, you know, maybe showing up the opposition or showing up a teammate or showing too much frustration in certain moments? He does seem to be more composed just in the moment, though. When he's actually in the batter's box, certainly seems to have more composure about him. He's had so many big hits this season that showcase that degree of control and composure that you want in moments of leverage. But then, yeah, I mean, even the moment you're talking about last night in extras where he gets the double and then he gets to second base and he's pounding his chest and he's getting his teammates going. So you still see that exuberance able to come out, but it does feel like there's more control to it.
That's Anthony Herron. I am Mark Grody. We collectively are and have been filling in for Spiegel and Holmes on The Score. We will wrap up the show after this.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Want to catch up with the national pastime in a short time? Tune into the Morning Lineup podcast. Every weekday, in less than 10 minutes, we'll bring you all the wonderful...
He's done it again! See ya! A monster two-run home run!
All the wild...
Here comes Ramos! This game is over!
All the weird...
Contreras is chewing on the tape.
...that makes the MLB season special. Check out the Morning Lineup on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Spiegel and Holmes show flashback.
Craig, I just want you to know as we let you go, we are rooting for you. We are rooting for you.
We can make history happen.
Yeah,
today.
No, I don't know. I don't know. Anthony seems to want you to be ejected. I want you to stay in the game tonight.
There has been a Cubs manager that has been ejected 3 consecutive games.
There hasn't been or has?
There has.
Who?
Is it Lou Piniella?
Yeah.
That's my guess. Lou Piniella?
Frankie Frisch. Nice Ooh. Try.
Frankie Frisch. Yeah.
Craig, you're the best man. Honest to God, if you do get ejected, will you come on the afternoon show again tomorrow?
Yeah, I will. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I will.
Mark
I will.
That down.
That's why we're safe.
Hey, Craig.
See you later.
You got it.
Oh, man.
He's going to do everything in his power to avoid getting ejected so he doesn't have to join us again tomorrow.
That's right. That's the idea. Nice try, idiot. That's nice kind of sort of his tone.
I took it, as usual, I took it a lot more positively than you did. I thought he legitimately thought I made a very nice off-the-cuff guess at Lou Piniella. What was your guess? I was hoping he was going to wait for you to take a guess. What were you going to go with?
Like Lou Piniella, I thought was...
I mean, you were obviously going to guess Frankie Frisch.
Frankie Frisch. Who was your second guess? I didn't even know if that was a real person. And then it was back in the 1940s. And I said, all that Harding's been working overtime for Craig Council, getting him that. Who would I have said? Yeah, I probably, like, if you hadn't taken Lou Piniella off the table, I probably would have gone with Lou Piniella as a possibility. I'm trying to think if there were other Cubs managers like that were actually red asses, like that. David Ross was a little bit of a.
I feel like we remembered that.
Like Don Baylor, Dusty Baker.
Dusty Baker wouldn't have got run three games in a row.
Not really. Like they're all too calm. There was, I mean, you go before that, you know, like a Herman Franks back in the day, Leo DeRocher.
Oh, Leo DeRocher.
You know, like he could probably, like those guys seemed like they had a little bit more angry to them. But now you've brought something up interesting as we go through this in real time about Cubs managers. They really haven't really ever had that. Well, Lou. But even Lou, even when Lou came to the Cubs, he was, in terms of getting booted out of games and that red ass, little past his prime in that way. Obviously, he was an older
man. Lou get after you, though.
No, he still get after you. He did, but it wasn't like it once. It wasn't like the Seattle days or his Yankees days.
Right.
It wasn't that kind of aggression. And after he'd have the aggression, it was sort of like this big deal. Like, oh, yeah, and doing that again. And hadn't done that in a long time. You know, it was like a novelty as opposed to somebody throwing Don Zimmer out there. Now, a couple people. Okay, you've been corroborated, sir. A couple of Don Zimmers, Popeye, the old third base coach, and then he became the manager of the Chicago Cubs, Don Popeye Zimmer.
So
he was a little bit of a red ass. You're right. He like literally like was like beat red most of the time too.
Seemed that way. After Frankie Frisch's retirement player, Frisch continued to manage the Cardinals, but was never able to capture another pennant. He did the whole player-coach thing, and he won a pennant with the Cardinals. Frisch also had management stints with the Pittsburgh Pirates from 40 to 46 and the Cubbies from 49 to 51. But without the success that he had in St. Louis, Frisch's career ledger as a manager shows 1,138 wins, 1,078 defeats, a 5-14 mark, including the pennant in 1934. That, according to Wiki.
Wow. And if you do believe in Wikipedia and one must have faith, that is a real person who has been ejected or was ejected in three straight games. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to see if Craig Council can do it tonight.
I'm really hoping he gets run.
Guess what else? I do too, because he'll be on this show tomorrow, which I will be hosting with you once again after the Cubs game. BTW, by the way. One more thing from Jed Hoyer, courtesy of New York Post Sports. The Kyle Tucker conversation was reinitiated again. Let's listen to Jed Hoyer on that.
If you are unable to sign him, is this trade worth it? And do you feel confident and as confident as when Vladimir Guerrero came up with $500 million? Does that affect you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an impossible question to ask on June 9th, right? You know, I think we have to see how the season goes to answer that question. You know, certainly, obviously, a player like him, you'd love to be able to keep him long term. But I mean, the Yankees are having a really good season this year. They didn't sign Juan Soto, and they gave up a lot to go get Juan Soto. Is that trade worth it? I think that's something that can be debated. Obviously, they had an exceptional season last year, so I just think you can't really answer that question on June 9th. Obviously, you know, like I said before, like he's a great player. He's been exactly what we hoped for. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. But certainly he's the kind of player that you'd love to have for a long time.
I don't know where you are right now on Kyle Tucker. I feel calm right now because somewhere along the line, probably, I don't know, probably about a month ago, maybe the last time this talk flared, but maybe even longer now, I am okay with just waiting until the end of the season before we meet this again. It would be nice, of course, to hear, yes, Kyle Tucker loves Chicago and things are trending, and maybe we will get those reports. Maybe that will eventually happen. It's just not a realistic thing to think, and most of this is probably driven by the player in terms of, hey, I'm going to wait till the end of the season and see what my value is and go wherever I want to go. Not that he doesn't like Chicago, but he gets to do this, period.
And Tucker himself, you know, is a guy who carries himself with a fairly mild manner, which that's part of it. Now, Chris Bryant did as well when all this stuff, remember like the last couple of years before Bryant hit free agency, there was like Bryce Harper. And like friends and extended friends of Chris Bryant were doing all the talking for Chris Bryant, and a lot of the rumors were swirling about that. There's not that. We haven't had the time for it to build up like that with Kyle Tucker. I don't know who his friends are. Maybe he's a loner. So you don't necessarily have some other baseball superstar who's out there spreading rumors about what's coming for him.
Yeah, he seems unmoved. That's what I'll say about Kyle Tucker, just from the demeanor and things that you hear from people in the know. Then I would say unmoved. He is kind of a loner. He's just like, not in a bad way or anything like that. Just a very quiet, keeps to himself, unassuming, humility-filled man. It sounds like what we call a good human being, actually.
I mean, I hope so. I don't know. I never met the dude. But
I think
you seem more worked up about Luther Burden's soft tissue than you are about Kyle Tucker's contract.
Dude, I'm worried. I just hope that he's all good to go. They're saying he's going to be good to go by training camp. I don't want anybody to think that because Anthony said that, like something bad happened to Burden. We got to go, though. Thanks to Craig Council was hilarious today. Steve Stone was wonderful today. Thank you, Anthony Heron. Thank you, Chris Tannehill. Thank you, Alex Kuhn. Thank you, Tyler Farengol. Thank you, Connor O'Donnell, and whoever else helped on this show. I am Mark Grody. We'll talk to y'all later. On Chicago Sports. He's getting his fast pass. He's going on Raging Bull right now. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That's
I saw
radio,
him earlier.
Right? You know. I mean, whatever. They tried. Didn't go over well. All good.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Want to catch up with the national pastime in a short time? Tune into the Morning Lineup podcast. Every weekday, in less than 10 minutes, we'll bring you all the wonderful...
He's done it again! See ya! A monster two-run home run!
All the wild...
Here comes Ramos! This game is over!
All the weird...
Contreras is chewing on the tape.
...that makes the MLB season special. Check out the Morning Lineup on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.